Welcome to Nutrition Conversations, a podcast dedicated to exploring the latest research in nutrition and health in Canada. In each episode, we interview expert guests who break down complex ideas into practical insights. From public health nutrition and chronic disease prevention to the latest in nutrition science, we cover it all. Whether you're a health professional, wellness enthusiast, or just curious about how food shapes our health and well-being, join us as we explore the ever-evolving world of nutrition, one conversation at a time. The views expressed by the guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of CNS. Hosting this episode is Dr. Sharon Panahi, Scientific Director of the Canadian Nutrition Society. She welcomes Kelsey Moore to episode 4 of season 3 of Nutrition Conversations to discuss common myths and misconceptions around digestive health. This podcast is in collaboration with the Canadian Digestive Health Foundation.
Hello, Nutrition Conversations listeners. Digestive health plays a crucial role in overall well-being, impacting everything from nutrient absorption and immune function to mental health. At the heart of this system is the gut microbiome, a complex network of microorganisms that helps regulate inflammation, metabolism, and even the risk of chronic diseases. Despite its importance, digestive health is often misunderstood, with myths about probiotics, fiber, gluten, and conditions like irritable bowel syndrome and celiac disease continuing to circulate widely. Joining us on this episode is Kelsey Moore from the Canadian Digestive Health Foundation. Kelsey is a registered dietitian with a retail nutrition background and experience in the digestive health space. Kelsey graduated from the University of British Columbia in 2019. She started her career as a sports dietitian and then moved into the retail space where she worked as a nutrition operations manager for a local BC food retailer. She is currently working as the senior account manager of nutrition for the Canadian Digestive Health Foundation, where she works with food and supplement brands to help deliver digestive health resources to Canadians. Kelsey is passionate about providing evidence-based information on digestive health and is currently on track to becoming a Monash FODMAP-trained dietitian. It is with great pleasure that I welcome you, Kelsey, to episode 4 of season 3 of Nutrition Conversations.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really happy to be here and excited to discuss digestive health with you.
Great. Thanks so much. And it's interesting because I actually just received an email from your organization a while ago about April being IBS Awareness Month and May being Celiac Disease Awareness Month. So quite a timely topic that we're about to discuss. And so over the past few years, the term gut health, we know, has gained a lot of attention in both research and popular media. And while this is often used, we know that its meaning can sort of differ depending on the context. So maybe we can start with some of the basics. And if you can maybe clarify what we really mean when we talk about gut health and why it has become such a prominent topic.
Yeah, no, I really like that you asked this question because to your point, it has become such a buzzword over recent years. So really gut health, kind of in a broader sense, really just refers to the overall health and well-being of our digestive system, which includes our stomach, our intestine, and the microbes living in our gut. So in recent years, there's really been an explosion of research in this area, which is why I think that's really helped drive public interest in the topic.
Right. And I mean, thank you for clarifying that. And so how do we normally measure gut health in science or clinical settings? Is that something we typically, we're able to measure or?
Yeah, that's a good question. There is more research in the area of the gut microbiota and measuring, what types of microbes we have in our gut, what different species, how much of each different species. But really, that research is still in its infancy. So we're starting to collect that data, but we're not really at a point where we can clinically make too many recommendations from that information we're gathering. But it is certainly a really interesting area.
Right. And I'm glad you mentioned the microbiome, because it's frequently highlighted in discussions about overall health and disease prevention, especially related to the digestive system. And so maybe for those who are less familiar, could you provide an overview of what the microbiome is and explain why it's important and maybe why it has become such a focal point in gut health research?
Yeah, no, great question. So first, I actually really want to break down two different terms that are often used interchangeably in this space. So the microbiome is a word that's commonly used, and that really refers to a community of microbes, whereas the microbiota refers to microbes that live within a specific environment like our gut. So often when you're hearing the word microbiome being used, people are usually discussing it in the context of the gut and are really referring to the gut microbiota. So when it comes to the gut microbiota, it is really important for things like our digestive health, our metabolism, our immune system, mood regulation. It's really important for so many things related to our health. And in fact, our gut microbiota actually starts to develop during birth. So our first exposure to microbes happens during delivery. And then by about 3 years of age, the gut microbiota starts to resemble a little bit more like an adult's gut microbiota. But really, it continues to develop and evolve throughout our life. It can be influenced by things like diet, exercise, a number of different factors, really. But essentially, a healthy gut microbiota can help protect us against certain diseases like IBS, IBD. So it's really, really important to help keep us healthy and prevent certain chronic diseases.
Right. So like you mentioned, there's a lot of factors that influence the composition of the microbiome and diet, of course, being one of them, which is our focus. And amongst a lot of the foods and components in the diet, we hear so much about probiotics. We know that they're widely marketed as essential for maintaining gut health. And recently, I see a lot of people turning to supplements and even fermented foods such as yogurt or kimchi to support their digestive health. So maybe from a scientific standpoint, maybe you can talk a little bit about the probiotics, but also probiotic supplements, whether they're necessary or can individuals achieve similar benefits through dietary sources, for example, through some of those that I mentioned, and maybe there are some other sources as well.
Yeah, so it's a great question. So really when it comes to probiotics, there really is a no one size fits all answer here. But in general, if someone is looking to support their overall gut health, definitely consuming fermented foods, like you mentioned, yogurt, kimchi, sauerkraut, things like that, can definitely help to possibly bring out more diverse species of gut microbes in the gut. Which is really important just for maintaining that healthy gut, as we discussed. But if you are looking to treat a specific digestive health condition, probiotics can help in some cases, possibly. But I really want to emphasize here that there are so many different types of probiotics. And although some of the research is really promising, it's still in its infancy. So in those select cases where probiotics may be warranted, you definitely want to work with a healthcare provider to help you choose a right probiotic, and then also, of course, determine if that is even necessary.
Maybe another thing that I should have also asked for our listeners is sort of what is a probiotic? You know, I think that's an important question, you know, to kind of clarify what it is. We talk about the sources, but, you know, what is it exactly?
Yeah, no, thank you for asking that. It is a really good question. So a probiotic is a microbe that confers a very specific health benefit on its host at a specific dose. So just to break that down, that's really referring to, a probiotic that has been researched for its specific health benefit, whether that's, you know, perhaps helping support with things like IBS symptom management, other digestive health diseases. But it is really different from a fermented food. So fermented foods, although they do contain live microbes like probiotics do, although they do contain microbes, but not necessarily, live microbes, An example of a fermented food that may not contain a live microbe might be something like a sourdough bread or tempeh that's been cooked. You've destroyed all those live microbes. So they may not actually confer a health benefit depending on if those microbes are live and how many of them are present in that food.
So not all fermented foods contain probiotics is what you're
Exactly.
saying. And so with the growing popularity of probiotics, we know the supplement market has also expanded. And we know not all probiotic products are created equally. What should consumers maybe understand about probiotics and gut health before they consider a probiotic supplement that they grab all, off the shelf? Are there different strains, or all, are they all the same?
Yeah, no, great question. So there certainly are different strains. So just to emphasize what I said before, you really do want to work with a healthcare provider to determine first if a probiotic is appropriate and necessary for you. And then they can help you choose, if it is necessary, a specific probiotic strain that might be beneficial. And then when you're going to choose that specific product in a store, hopefully a healthcare provider is guiding you maybe on some different options, but you definitely want to look for reputable brands. So something you can do is see if a brand is third-party tested. Often they'll have some of that information on their label, or you might have to go on their site to look that up. But really what's important here is a product that's been third-party tested is really just gives us a better indication if the product actually contains what it says it contains on the label. And then also you want to look for the expiration date. So probiotics lose their potency over time. So it's really important that you ensure you choose one that has a longer shelf life. And then you also want to check the storage too, because some products do require refrigeration.
Right. And I mean, we're talking about supplements here, but you also made me think we mentioned yogurt and whether all yogurts c contain probiotics. This is a question that comes up to me quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a good question. Yogurt's an interesting one. So there are select yogurts that do contain probiotics, but not all yogurts contain probiotics. So it really just comes down to, again, looking what's on the package. Is it a reputable brand? Sometimes it involves looking at the website. But this is also why I encourage working with healthcare providers, because even as a healthcare provider, it can be really tricky to navigate that information on your own.
Right. No, that's great. Thank you for clarifying that. And so, in terms of digestive health, we mentioned some of the conditions, such as celiac disease, irritable bowel syndrome, or IBS rather, lactose intolerance, for example. These are conditions that may be frequently misunderstood and sometimes even used interchangeably, even though they involve different mechanisms and dietary needs. I was wondering if you can maybe walk us through some of the key differences and through some of these conditions and mention if there are others to consider.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so it's important to note that while some of the conditions you mentioned have similar symptoms, they are truly different, and therefore treatment options will differ. So I'll start first with celiac disease. So celiac disease is an autoimmune disorder where ingesting gluten, which is the protein found in wheat products, actually damages the inside of our intestine. So at this time, there's no cure for celiac disease, but following a lifelong strict gluten-free diet is necessary and really the only real treatment option at this point. And then regarding something like lactose intolerance, so that's very different. It's not a true allergy, it's really a sensitivity to lactose. So lactose is a naturally occurring sugar that's found in dairy products. And so, for most people with a lactose intolerance, ingesting lactose isn't or sorry, for all people with lactose intolerance, ingesting lactose is not damaging to the gut, but it can cause some of those unwanted symptoms like gas, bloating, diarrhea. So some treatment options there include either avoiding or limiting high lactose foods. You don't typically need to avoid all foods that contain lactose, just some of those ones that contain a lot. So things like milk, for example, can be an issue for some people. Or you can choose lactose-free alternatives. Or you can try supplementing with lactase enzyme to help you with your symptoms. And then so many different digestive health issues I can discuss, but I want to go over irritable bowel syndrome. So IBS is actually a disorder of the gut-brain interaction. So what happens in people with IBS is really the gut and the brain misinterpret signals to one another, which can lead to changes in how the gut moves. So really this can lead to some of those similar unwanted digestive symptoms like diarrhea, constipation, stomach pain, and more. Treatment options vary here, but currently the best available option for most people is following a low FODMAP diet to help with some of those symptoms. And then just to expand on that a little bit further, a low FODMAP diet is a diet that's low in sugars that are easily fermented in the gut for people with IBS.
Great. You answered my next question about FODMAPs. But I actually want to go back to the gluten story. Sort of you mentioned celiac disease, and I feel that gluten-free diets, we know, they're increasingly popular right now, but gluten avoidance is really only necessary for certain groups. And so you talked about individuals with celiac who need to avoid it. Are there sort of other groups? Is there, could you explain who truly benefits from a gluten-free diet and why it's maybe not a one-size-fits-all approach?
Yeah, good question. So it really is only people with celiac disease that need to entirely avoid gluten. For anyone else, it's not typically advised to avoid gluten, unless you have a clear medical reason to do so. And that's just because these foods are full of essential nutrients like vitamins, minerals, fiber, which can be challenging sometimes to get in non-gluten containing foods. If you do perhaps think you have a gluten sensitivity, you can always explore that with your healthcare provider, and maybe they will test you to see if you have celiac disease or not. But yeah, typically, we don't recommend following a strict gluten-free diet unless you have a medical reason to do so.
Right. I mean, we see so many products on the market that are, gluten-free, and I see people sort of grabbing these products off the shelf, and you often wonder, well, is it really necessary? And so I appreciate you clarifying that. I also want to talk about another component of the diet, fiber, which is well established, as part of a healthy diet, and its role in digestive health. I feel that it's sometimes underestimated. And the fact that there are so many different types of fibers with distinct effects on the gut. So, could you talk a little bit about what role fiber plays in digestive health and whether all fibers are created equally?
Yeah, so I love this question. I don't think you'll meet a dietitian who doesn't get excited about talking about fiber. Yeah, so fiber is really important when it comes to our overall digestive health. Really, there are two main types of fiber, so I'll just break those down. So one of them is insoluble fiber. So this is the type of fiber that doesn't gel in water. So if you think of foods like kale, Brussels sprouts, some of those kind of rougher vegetables, those typically contain insoluble fiber. So why that's important is because insoluble fiber specifically helps support bowel regularity and prevent constipation. Whereas another type of fiber, soluble fiber, on the other hand, does gel in water. So if you think of foods, when you put them in water, they gel. Things like chia seeds, oats, even bananas, apples, things like that contain soluble fiber. And that type of fiber is really important for a lot of different things. So it may help lower cholesterol, prevent blood sugar spikes, and then even help prevent things like diarrhea and constipation as well. But I just wanted to highlight, even though I just highlighted like a few different examples of where you can find different types of fiber, really most whole plant foods contain fiber, and some of them actually contain both types of fiber as well. But yeah, you can find fiber in foods like whole grains, beans, lentils, seeds, nuts, fruits, vegetables, lots of different foods.
And maybe someone who's not used to having fiber, how can someone increase their fiber gradually without feeling that discomfort or some of the side effects that are associated with it?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because, yeah, to your point, if you're not used to consuming a lot of fiber and then you suddenly start consuming a lot of fiber, you know, you definitely are more likely to have some of those unwanted digestive symptoms like bloating, diarrhea, things like that. So really, you want to start increasing it gradually. So what I mean by that is maybe you try with adding half a cup of beans to your meal in a day. Maybe you're making a soup one night, and instead of doing just a meat-based soup, maybe you swap out half the meat for beans. That could be a good way to slowly increase your fiber. Or maybe you choose to swap out your white bread for whole grain bread. Those can be some little tools that can just help you. And then after doing that for a few days or a week, then you can look at adding another fiber source into your diet, and that should help prevent or mitigate some of those digestive symptoms you might experience.
Right. And in terms of the amount of fiber, and I'm trying to remember the numbers, I think it was the recommendation was 28 grams per day for women. Am I remembering this correctly? Because I'm trying to think of the difference, or sort of the recommendation for soluble versus insoluble fiber. And in terms of what the total recommendations should be from when men and women, I'm wondering if you can remind me of that.
Yeah, no. So for fiber recommendations, it varies slightly depending on, you know, which health source you look at, but on average, roughly about 25 to 35 grams of fiber a day. And that'll really depend, you know, on your body size. So if you're somebody who's quite tall, you might require a little bit more fiber than somebody is who is shorter. And in terms of specific recommendations for each, we don't really particularly recommend getting a certain amount of a certain type of fiber. Just like I mentioned, most plant foods do tend to contain a bit of both fiber anyway. So if you're eating lots of whole plant foods throughout the day and meeting your daily fiber goals, that should help you get enough. You know, that being said, if you are struggling with some digestive health concerns, perhaps like constipation, maybe increasing your soluble fiber intake specifically might help you move things along a little more smoothly.
Right. And speaking of constipation, can you talk a little bit about what some of the primary causes are? I know we talked a little bit about strategies to mention it, including, you know, increasing your fiber intake, but what sort of causes it? And, you know, maybe other than fiber, are there other solutions or ways to manage and prevent it maybe?
Yeah, so I want to say, you know, constipation really is more common than people think it is, and it can really impact anyone at any age. There's so many different possible causes of constipation, but I'll just name a few of the more common ones. So one could be just not generally not eating enough fiber, a lack of movement, not being well hydrated, changes in routine too. So things like traveling, some people can find they tend to get more constipated when they're traveling. Stress and anxiety can also cause constipation. And then sometimes certain types of medications as well. So it's really kind of just a whole host of reasons that can, you know, cause constipation.
Right. And actually, we're sort of along the same lines. I was thinking about, for example, when it comes to stool, maybe an uncomfortable topic for people to talk about. Are there certain characteristics, for example, like frequency, shape, or consistency that people should sort of pay attention to, you know, while sort of monitoring their digestive health?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, what's normal can really vary from person to person, but on average, having a bowel movement anywhere from up to 3 times a day or once every couple of days can be considered normal. And that really does vary person to person. But if you have found you've gone several days without having a bowel movement, then you definitely do want to seek medical advice on what your next steps might be. And then another thing I want to point out too is if you ever do see blood in your stool, that is a time too where you want to involve a healthcare provider.
Right. No, that's a great point. There's so many different topics that I feel that we can talk about digestive health. You work with the Canadian Digestive Health Foundation. I guess the goal is really to help Canadians better understand and manage digestive health. And so I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about some of the educational tools and resources that you have that can help the general public or some of our listeners to navigate, you know, any digestive issues.
Okay, yeah. So CDHF has resources on over 22 different digestive health diseases across our site, which are free for anybody to access. We create those resources in various mediums. So that's articles, infographics, videos. So however you learn best, we have, different ways of viewing those resources. And then I will highlight a few of our key resources. So one of them is our My IBS app, which helps users track their IBS symptoms and triggers and offers some insights on how to better manage your condition. And then we also have our My IBD journal. So that's specific to inflammatory bowel disease. And this journal is a digital platform, and it's really designed to help support people, so particularly adolescents and young adults, manage their IBD from pediatric care into adult care.
Okay, perfect. And so I know your website is one place to go to for these resources. And, you know, for individuals experiencing digestive challenges, access to credible information and support is certainly essential. If someone wants to support their digestive health without getting lost in some of these trends or products or supplements, you know, some of that, the ones that we discussed as well, what are 2 to 3 maybe evidence-based steps they can take, or what are your recommendations as someone who works in this space?
Yeah, so there are really so many different simple steps someone can take to help promote their digestive health without getting caught up in the latest fad. A few of which we've already addressed, but just to recap, first and foremost, eating a balanced diet, high in fiber, so including lots of those whole plant foods. We talked about adding fiber in more slowly if you're not used to including fiber. And then we talked a little bit about stress, but stress actually can play a really important role in the gut. So learning stress management techniques that work for you specifically can really help with your gut and keep things moving, keep the beneficial bacteria in your gut happy and thriving. So that can look different for different people, but maybe that's physical activity, maybe that's deep breathing, maybe that's yoga, maybe that's going for a walk, but really here just learning what stress management techniques work best for you. And then lastly, too, we touched on this a bit, too, but also including more of those fermented foods in your diet where you can, which can possibly help increase that diversity of microbes in your gut.
Great. I think those are great recommendations. And we've talked a lot about different topics. I know we kind of touched on them. We can certainly get deeper into each one. We talked a little bit about what gut health really means, a little bit about the microbiome, the roles of some of these dietary fiber components, including probiotics, fiber, and diet in supporting a healthy digestive system. You talked a little bit about celiac, IBS, and lactose intolerance, and we talked a little bit about some of the recommendations. So I'd like to extend a sincere thank you to you, Kelsey, for sharing your insight and expertise and helping us to better understand this important area of health. We're certainly grateful for your time and knowledge.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to share information on digestive health. I think it's so, so important for everyone to learn. So thank you again for having me.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you for tuning in to Nutrition Conversations. We hope that you found today's discussion informative and inspiring. If you're interested in hearing more about the latest research in nutrition and health, be sure to check out our website at cns-scn.ca/podcast for upcoming podcasts. Remember, our podcasts are always available on the Spotify app, so you can easily listen to us on the go. Simply search for the Nutrition Conversations podcast on Spotify and you'll find all our episodes in one place. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode.